Welcome to Imagine This Podcast, where we discuss, celebrate, and highlight all of the excellence and abundant arts and culture in Milwaukee.
We hope that after listening to the pod, you'll see and experience our city and the incredibly vibrant arts and culture community in a new way. I'm David Lee.
And I'm Mac Antigua. Hey, we're back for another edition of Imagine This Podcast. Welcome, listener, and joining us. Yes, there's a bit of a spring in my step, as usually compared to the last previous weeks where I just sort of jump on and be like, bleh, because it's a bit sunnier lately. It's a bit lighter lately. So I'm bringing that energy into the pod this week, David. How are you?
We made it. Yeah, we made it. And we've been buoyed by Bernie Sanders' mittens. Obviously, that's been probably like with every other workplace. That's been the thing that's been burning up our intranet, our staff chats. Has been these mittens.
Yeah. That won that day. That won the inauguration. And so that's how you know that you're relevant and resonant. Yeah, you're not even the featured guest. But he was all of us, I think.
You know, yeah, the thing I love the most about that story is that, you know, the school teacher who made those mittens for him, like she made these mittens as part of a thing that she does, but she's a school teacher. Like she has that sort of crafty kind of like creativity, right? That mm-hmm. she sort of does. And like these mittens are now being featured, you know, in the pages of Vogue and on every social media feed in the world. Isn't that just incredible that, you know, you harness a little bit of your own internal creative energy and now, you know, you are as famous as any other social media influencer.
Well, you know, I think, David, you didn't mean to, but that's an interesting, I think, to me, analogy for our guests later today.
Yeah.
And at the back end, after the break, we're going to be bringing on to the pod, returning to the pod, Sam Ragani, creative here in Milwaukee, mainly in visual arts, in terms of photography and film. And then we also have Gabe Yeager, coming back. He's the downtown environment specialist at Milwaukee Downtown BID. And so they both will be coming back to talk about the COVID-19 remembrance and Milwaukee's role in it, as well as sort of the role of using, you know, arts to amplify culture and amplify a city. And there was definitely some serendipity that happened.
Yeah. And so I think this was in our teaser last week. We didn't know that we would have Sammer and Gabe here to talk about those topics. And I think that's one of the nice things about like doing a weekly podcast where you don't necessarily plan out in advance so far is that I don't think we would have known, right, when we recorded our podcast 2 weeks ago.
What a nice way of sort of affirming, retconning our really problematic planning process.
Shambolic planning process.
Shambolic, retconning, shambolic plan. Yeah, this is the destiny. That's why we keep it open. No, but we will have another. I'm excited to say at the end of this, we'll have our next
week. Actually, no. Yeah, that's right.
That being said, we're looking forward to that. But you know what else I didn't expect this past week?
I was just about to say, speaking of shambolic.
Yeah, you know what happened this past week? I was a host for X-Fabulous Story Slam this week. And so I didn't, last time we recorded, I was not expecting, that was right. Not something I had on my planner.
So a couple of weeks ago, I'm on the board of X-Fabula, and the folks planning last Wednesday's event said, hey, you know, the theme for that for the event is reimagining Milwaukee. Given your work, do you want to host it? And I said, sure, absolutely, happy to host it. And then something came up at home. No. Speaking about shambolic, I call up Mac like the day before, the day of, and I'm like, hey, what are you doing Wednesday night? Do you want to host X Fabula?
You're like, hey, are you available Wednesday night for something? I'm usually like, Wednesday night? Okay, what's up? You'd offered that, and full disclosure, I am a member of X Fabula, have been since 2019, so I'm familiar with X Fabula, support the work. So I'm like, oh yeah, I'd love
to. You told a story on their stage.
Yeah, I told I my first X Fab was like several years ago, over at the Time Cinema, I believe, Avalon.
Yeah,
on Vliet. That was like 5-6 years ago. It was my first one. And then since then, but it took me 5 years to get on stage, which was at the Cooperage last year. And then now Milwaukee Bucket List I finally hosted one. So thanks to you, I hosted, which was virtually conducted. And the theme was reimagining Milwaukee. And so I got to be the host for that event. And so that was awesome because I haven't gone to any events, even though I'm a paying member.
You haven't gone to any of the virtual events.
Yeah, I haven't gone to any virtual events. Yeah. It's tough for me to make the live events. I want it to exist, so I support it. But it was a real privilege to host. I was nervous. I do lots of Zoom calls. I mean, it's on Zoom, right?
I was surprised that you were nervous, given that you're sort of front of room quite a bit when you're in, when we're in person. Then you do a lot of the hosting of our events. You are the co-host of this show with me. So just when you
like, that with Matt, me, I don't like, see you care at all before. You never show any, but yet in one day, you're all a bundle of nerves. And I'll tell you why. I think that's how I hold sacred the way Xfabula holds its space for storytellers. Mm. In our city. And again, their mission is the weaving Milwaukee together through stories. And I wanted to do right by that. So I think that's the, I didn't want to seem cavalier and be like, oh, I'm just going to sweep in and do this. I wanted to make sure we do this right. And I want to say and let folks know, it's magical what they do. In a time where we're socially distanced, it's probably more important than ever to have spaces where folks can come and be vulnerable and share their stories of reimagining the city. And that's what happened that night. And one more thing I want to offer and sort of the insight I gained was even though they like, David, you put me in the role, like literally the day of or the day before, it really speaks to the thoughtfulness they had in setting me up for success. Cause like got a script, talked with Aaliyah, who is the producer. She was available not just before, but also during, you know, had our sort of back channel to chat and how the show was going to go. And there's about, you know, 40 to 50 folks on the call.
Yeah.
So it was a pretty healthy group, that was there. It was really awesome. We had 5 storytellers share their stories, and this was curated. Sometimes folks can sign up the night of. They did this in a curated way. So some of these folks have had some previous experience telling on a stage, and they've had work with the coaches to hone their stories. One of the stories was spoken in both Spanish and English. Mm. I was really struck by how all the tellers, you know, really looked like Milwaukee. You know, folks telling their stories and folks really receiving their stories. Yeah, I think they do it right. And I'm really reaffirmed myself to be a proud member of Xfabula, but I'm really appreciative of what they're doing in this time. So, yeah.
You know, I think there's some folks out there who think that, you know, putting on, like dressing up the barn and putting on a play, for example, right, to ape that old saw, is that it is easy, it's cheap, and it doesn't take a whole lot, right? And I think particularly when you experience like an Xfabula event, even in person,
yeah,
where it's at Turner Hall or a bar or some other space, right? It feels like it sort of comes together, it comes together at the seat of its pants, and it's really low cost. But I think what you're getting at, Mac, is that like the level of curation that sort of goes on behind the scenes, even for hosts and tellers and just sort of the space itself, takes time, takes care, takes resources, it takes attention, really. And that's like the probably the most expensive thing, right? Like it is the time and the attention it takes to sort of curate that experience.
You know, if one was going in a non-pandemic, and hopefully when we come back from, you know, everybody gets vaccinated or we get this thing under control, they'll be able to conduct in real time at a place like Company Brewing,
yeah,
or at the Cooperage or at the, you know, all around town, right? They do these. Yeah, and you're right, Dave. You sort of show up, you grab your beer and you're sitting and it's like, oh, it looks like anybody could, it's open mic night. It walks up, right? And and the reality is like, it may look like that, yeah, but it there is so much thoughtfulness about who speaks, how you're speaking in a way so that people feel that they're included. And the right people are in the room, not just the tellers, but the people that are going to watch us. They are very clear about, if you want to come to this show, this is why you're coming to the show. And everybody's there to want to be part of that. And you know, this, you're not buying a product. And again, this is not I'm not meant to throw shade at any other sort of form that's like, oh, I'm buying to be entertained. I think when they come to an experience, I think lots of arts would say this, you're coming to be part of something.
Yeah.
You know, you were, again, like any theater performance, they may be performing a play, but the audience is part of that, right? They're reacting in real time.
Yeah.
just because folks are telling stories and you don't see an elaborate stage and people are in costume and lights and they may not have that level of tech, the people tech, if you will, is high. And to, because you can't get that kind of vulnerability without having the intentionality that they have. And so this may sound like a commercial for XFAB, you know, and yeah, you're on the board and I'm a member, you know, I'm happy to shill for it even off this pod, but the reality is it takes, to your point, even to do something on Zoom, to be thoughtful, it takes a lot of time because that's how you get a lot of people, like 50 people to come onto a show. You know, how many Zoom meetings am I on all day? I don't want to be on a Zoom meeting, but they don't make it feel like a Zoom meeting. Or again, I'm actually tonight, I'm going to go to the Milwaukee Opera Theater's performance in the clouds. They're convening a thing tonight on Zoom, but they've built some pieces. It was, you know, it's beyond a Zoom thing that's interactive. I'm looking forward to that. So to your point, David, a lot of companies are thinking of, this is a format, but it isn't the only way. How do we make this as three-dimensional as possible,
even though you're speaking a little bit about like the level of innovation that some of the groups are sort of experimenting with dealing with the format of Zoom, right? And it's not like just because we've been in COVID time and the precautions of large-scale convenings, in-person convenings, where performing arts groups cannot perform, it is also the fact that you can't just put up a Zoom camera and put on, you know, In the Heights, right? Like, you can't just set up a Zoom camera or like your laptop and just do Hamilton, you know, like it doesn't work that way, right? Yeah. So there is like, and also I think there's another point that I think you were alluding to, like this idea of Zoom fatigue, right? Like. Yeah. Like I've seen a lot of Zoom productions of many of different arts groups over the last few months. And man, like I love theater. I love performing arts. It's real hard to sit in front of my computer for yet another Zoom meeting sometimes, right? So there's like that level of like, how do you get the format to sort of meet the demands of the art form and of the time. I think it's incredibly complex.
And I guess for me, David, right, that right now, you know, that exquisite experience I had hosting XFabula is just a reminder that this happens pandemic or not, right? Anytime something's being presented in our arts and culture, there is so much thought that is being intended and curated. You said the word curated, and that is keen. And, you know, I know I'll be paying attention more to that, you know, especially when I get back things in real life, quote unquote, in real life, in three dimensional, you know, is really honoring. Yeah, there's a thing when the curtain comes up or like you walk in, but even before you walked in, there was a lot of thought being put into how do you even enter the space and who's greeting you? And what's it look like? What's it smell like? What am I doing? You know, and I think that matters. Space matters. And that's why we've got our guests today. That's my pivot to the interview we're about to have. We are bringing on Gabe Yeager from the Downtown Bid, who's a downtown environment specialist. And we're bringing on Sam Mergani, who is a producer, director, photographer, videographer, and journalist. They've both been featured here in Imagine MK on our podcast in different ways. But as a result, we wanted to bring them on, to your point, David, that the remembrance happened recently this week, National Day of Remembrance, and Milwaukee participated to commemorate the loss of 400,000 folks in our country. And both Samer and Gabe participated. They weren't the only ones. They'll be quick to remind you that they were part of a larger effort, but they were the ones we could grab on short notice and were super cool with it, and who could speak really eloquently about what it meant and what is the role of arts and culture in these events like the National Day of Remembrance, like the inauguration, right? What does it mean to be part of the national and local meaning-making as we are the society? That conversation's happening after the break. Welcome back, Samer and Gabe.
Thanks for having us.
I like that Samer waved. It's an audio podcast, Samer.
I like that you waved. Yeah, I waved.
Well, you're a visual medium. That's it's always visual for you. Welcome back. Me and David are front loading 2021 with our money guests that we're bringing it back. So that's why we brought you
the return guest club.
Yeah,
the
return
guest club. Continues to grow.
Doing it again. But actually, quick handling, this is a very timely conversation given the events of most recently the National Day of Remembrance for COVID-19, as well as the inauguration of President Biden and Vice President Harris. And we're marking that, you know, that last event, why I'm lifting it up is not necessarily to be partisan, but rather to note these are like civic events, right? These are ways that as a society we mark the passage of time together. And there's been a role of arts and culture in that and present in both. And so wanted to bring you both on, Sammer as an artist yourself and a creative yourself, but also Gabe as one who facilitates these opportunities and space for these things to happen. You both played a role most recently in the Milwaukee contribution to that National Day of Remembrance, but also wanting to gain your insights around what does it mean for arts and culture to play a role in our collective meaning making. So that's on the TV guide. You know, you're tuning in. What's on today's episode? Oh, Sammer and Gabe, we're going to talk about collective meaning making and the role of arts and culture. All right, maybe I'll DVR that one. I'll go watch. I'll watch Blue Bloods. But all seriously, welcome. It's great to have you back. And let's just start with this notion of how did the COVID-19 project, and just to quickly note and check me if I'm wrong, right? There was a National Day of Remembrance where buildings were going to light up all across the country, and also toll the bell at 4 o'clock, four times, for each of the 100,000 folks who had passed during this time. And every city that was participating was going to have, they're going to participate in their own way. And the way Milwaukee participated was not only just lighting up its buildings, it was lighting up the Hone Bridge. And
that's correct.
Really phenomenal was really, this was the first time nationally we've seen the bridge lit up that way. We've seen it locally when we had the debut a few months ago, but this was an opportunity for this to be featured. And I just want to note, it's all about creating a new story for Milwaukee, and seeing the bridge lit up in that way and being part of this national conversation was a way that Milwaukee was contributing to a story perhaps in a new way. So that's the context, y'all. Sammer and Gabe, tell us a story about, you know, either from your perspective, how do you get to that point?
Yeah, I guess I'll jump in and toss it over to Sammer, who really was on the ground. But thanks so much for having me back. It was, I think the last time I was on your show is a couple of weeks before the virtual DNC in Milwaukee. So it's nice to come back to your podcast and talk about the inauguration and kind of some reflection. But I would say about a week and a half before the inauguration, one of our largest property owners and also a fellow board member with Milwaukee Downtown reached out to us saying, "Hey, I saw this come through that it looks like the Biden inauguration is planning some sort of national lighting. Have you heard any chatter about it?" So we started pretty quickly piecing some information together. And quite frankly, the information came all at once about 48 hours before the actual event. So it was, you know, what we ended up doing is emailing. We created a landmark lighting database in Milwaukee so we can do these unified efforts really at a response of COVID-19. We've done it a couple times when we lit up red, white, and blue for at the beginning of the pandemic as a sign of unity. We lit up rainbow for pride. It's a nice way to unify our downtown properties and show a collective effort from the city, especially right now when we can't physically program people in space. Mm-hmm. So long story short, we, you know, about a week ago, you know, so essentially the Saturday before the Tuesday memorial, we had an all cities call across the city, or excuse me, across the country with the Biden Inauguration Committee. Here in Milwaukee, it was really led by the Milwaukee Downtown Bid Group, the mayor's office, and like the Hone. And we worked on the communication and outreach, lining up about a half a dozen photographers to capture the city in every single angle, Sammer being critical to that, which he can speak on. And then, you know, really even down to the coordination of our city hall lighting, which I do love the story of lighting up city hall because our city hall doesn't have You know, it's not physically lit, you know, like most city halls, I think, across the country. So after Light the Hone, we need to work on lighting City Hall. But, you know, interestingly, we worked with the local stage theater employee union, IASTE Local 18. And it's a story of like physically bringing up lights to the top of the clock tower, you know, and I think there's so much meaning and symbolism behind that. And then, of course, we coordinated the bell ringing, you know, marking this really unfortunate milestone in the country, each bell tone representing 100,000 people who have died. So, you know, the memorial came together really beautifully, probably 50 or so people across the city that had, you know, you know, opportunity to work with us in terms of lighting up, being part of this national memorial. I have to give a shout out to you know, the Light the Hone group who jumped on really quickly and supported us. And then also, you know, Sammer, who I can't wait for you to hear, you know, how he captured the Hone, and then also Front Room Photography, who captured as well that night. So really was a unified collective effort, which at the end of the day, you know, the Biden Inauguration Committee really pointed out that this would be the first time the nation actually took a moment to observe the loss of life since the beginning of the pandemic about 10 months ago. So to me, that, you know, it's almost unimaginable that we haven't had that unified collective moment of remembrance or unity or silence since the beginning of the pandemic. So it was, you know, a nice opportunity for Milwaukee. And then, you know, thanks to Sammer, we were able to, you know, shine in the national spotlight as well with our participation.
Great. Gabe, thanks for starting here. This is like Rashomon. Everybody's gonna tell their version of what happened. Sammer, well, tell us about, you know, where were you when you got the call? Take us from the beginning, where, you know, from just being a person to like being involved.
I don't even know where to start. Thank you for having me again on the podcast, first of all, and for always having artists like myself and providing a platform. I appreciate it. I know a lot of other people do too. But Gabe reached out to me that Saturday. And I was standing in my, I just got out of the shower and I was like reading a text from Gabe about it. And I was like, okay, like, let's get this done. But before I even tell the story of like how that happened, I think Gabe pointed out that there are so many people, so many artists that were involved to make this come to fruition. Front Room Studios, that team being one of them, having an integral part with like Downtown Bid and the mayor's office and, you know, their work being shown on CNN and PBS, like that is huge. And that's and that's amazing. So it really shows a testament to the work they bring to the community. So that I'm very, very excited for them, as well as the group chats that I was in with Light the Hone and the other photographers. And we were coordinating drones and making sure the airspace was safe. And I met new photographers. Like I made friends that night while we were all capturing. It was like this beautiful community effort to get this done. But in a nutshell, Gabe made the call. I answered the call. We went out there, documented this thing. You know, what Gabe does is an art form in itself, and that needs to be recognized. But Gabe's coordination to take my footage, send it to all the right channels, which one of them being Visit Milwaukee. Visit Milwaukee being so awesome, they chose to tweet my video, which I'm very grateful for. And that tweet happened to go viral, which I am also very grateful for. It was just awe-inspiring to see so many people across the nation on Twitter recognize Milwaukee in that way. So many replies to that tweet were like, I have to go to Milwaukee when the pandemic's over. I have to check this out. This is so crazy. It was such a beautiful thing to see. And I got a DM on Twitter from a random account I never followed before. And they said, hey, do you mind if we use this footage from this tweet to be on the Rachel Maddow show on MSNBC? And I'm going to be honest, I didn't know who Rachel Maddow was. So I thought this person was joking with me. I Googled her. And my partner did too. And I was like, yes, please, absolutely. And they took the footage and ran with it. And, you know, that's how a small piece of Milwaukee history was made. And I am very humbled and incredibly grateful to you know, be that person that whose footage was used. But I cannot express enough how it was a 100 people effort. It was like a Minuteman effort of Milwaukee artists, creatives, directors, producers, across the city coming together to make this happen?
You know, I think my part of my very tiny sliver of the Rashomon story on this one, I think it is either Sunday evening or Monday morning. I was scrolling through Reddit, and I'm on the Milwaukee subreddit, right? And I see the photo of the hone lit up, and I'm like, God, that looks like a Sammer photo. and I'm like again, I'm like, did somebody make like a Samargani filter? Like that looks, I'm certain that's a Samargani photo. I didn't comment on it. I liked it. And then I saw it on your Facebook feed, Sammer, that you had posted it afterwards, and I was like, I knew it. And then to see it on Rachel Maddow that night. I mean, it was so crazy, right? Just from where I was sitting, like seeing it like on a, again, like the Milwaukee subreddit to your Facebook to MSNBC. It was incredible.
Yeah,
so proud of you, man.
Interestingly, yeah, it's same Sammer. Congratulations. And interestingly,
thank you.
We thanks to like the hone again, we did a practice run Monday evening of what we were actually about to show the world on Tuesday, which I think, you know, and it was interesting to Sammer's point, we literally had air traffic control because of the amount of drones that we were circling the bridge with. We tried to capture it from every single angle and try to get it the best shots. And the video feeds were coming into Michael at the hone and myself, and we were, you know, vetting through and uploading to the, we literally had a Dropbox folder for the producers for Celebrating America. So we were literally uploading this content from Milwaukee to the producers. And of course there was no guarantee. And I think part of the story, which was kind of interesting, is that, you know, we worked about a week preparing for it. And Monday, before the memorial, the national press release comes out and doesn't list Milwaukee in the national press release. And, you know, granted, they have a lot going on, you know, a lot on their plate, but I did take the moment in the politest way I could and say, you know, we, you know, as the host city of the convention, and, you know, we've really built our case. But, you know, and I think, you know, and I was very careful because I didn't want that to come back to me. But, you know, I think Milwaukee deserved to be, you know, it was already planning to be part of the inauguration event with the memorial. And, you know, and then to start, you know, fortunately, we did a lot of the testing Monday night, a lot of the filming. So by Tuesday of the National Memorial, I think Milwaukee was one of the first cities to be sending out information. So by 5:30, Sammer's video was out there, which I think other cities were probably documenting, you know, their work at that time. So by Tuesday at midnight, 1 a.m., we had our final files, you know, uploaded. And Tuesday night, if you remember, snowed here in Milwaukee. So visibility was very low. Drones couldn't fly Tuesday night, so to do it Monday and to get that crisp image of Milwaukee across in both national spots was, you know, was very, very perfectly planned. But it was you know, very fortunate too that, you know, all the stars aligned on that.
I Gabe, it sort of speaks to you as a person that you're very generous because you know what it's probably like to be on their end, right? Of like, it was probably an oversight,
sure.
Right? And the last thing you probably want to be is that person teeing off on some person who was in charge of that presser that had to get it out. That being said, Gabe, you also had to hold your ground because it's like, we're not going to let Milwaukee get overlooked again, man. Like, I'm not doing my job.
It is actually
unless I raise my hand and go, hey, can you? Right? Like, so I know that's a fine thing. That's a pass. You had to thread the needle. You really did have to thread the needle on that one.
Yeah, and it was kind of our, you know, I think we know that moment of like, oh, we did everything. We didn't get included in the national release, but we decided to double down and actually send out more photographers and kind of go at it one more time to really ensure that, you know, the big moment, you know, of this was Milwaukee, seeing Milwaukee. And I remember hearing Ian and Michael talk about why they were lighting the hone, but see Milwaukee right after the Empire State Building, or sandwiched between New York, Chicago, Seattle's of the world. You know, that moment, to our understanding, the first time the hone was on national television, really, I think, fulfilled that whole idea of why we're lighting the hone, that Milwaukee's part of that national conversation.
You know, just a few months ago, ESPN was using old footage of Lakefront Milwaukee, of buildings that didn't exist, because that's all they had in their B-roll. And now we've got some new B-roll, right? We've got some new, right? Like to your point, right? Like let's update the conversation and let's make sure that, and again, to your point, Sam, are people reacting, wow, I didn't know Milwaukee. All right. I got to check this out. Right. Like that's,
yeah. Yeah.
That's I think the desired effect, right? That you want people to feel that way.
And to Gabe's point, I think like with Milwaukee not being included in the national press release, doubling down and almost like owning it and finding that moment to make it happen. Yeah. Luckily, Front Room was able to own it and make that that moment happen again, which again is amazing, which is so cool. So I just feel very fortunate to not only work alongside Gabe and their team at Milwaukee Downtown, but organizations like Front Room and the rest of the artists that were on the ground to make that happen. I feel very, very humbled and blessed to have 2020 be the year that I get to really represent Milwaukee. A lot of my past had a lot of my past has been trying to show people that arts and culture in Milwaukee have a place in not only like the citywide conversation, but in the national conversation as well. And to have my career snowball from that to something like this, is nothing short of a miracle. And I feel very fortunate to be a part of that.
To build on that, I didn't mean to cut you off, Samer, but like I think your year, I think is an interesting look at sort of the integration of arts and culture and civic life, right? So when we sort of think about like the start from our perspective, right? The 414 Day video featured the work of Dasha Kelly Hamilton, her poem Life in Motion. That sort of led Gabe and us to work together on Road of Democracy later on in the fall. And then at the inauguration, Amanda Gorman like kills everybody, slays everybody with her, The Hill We Climb, right? And so here we are, right? And I think there's just like this incredible like arc of a story for that your, I think your year, Samer, sort of is a part of that arc, but also the sense of like our city being the city that the DNC ought to, the convention should have been in, but because of COVID it wasn't, and now we're here, right? I mean, it's just what an incredible just arc of a year for you and the bid and all of these folks and arts and culture sort of being a part of all of that, right?
Yeah, it kind of proves that arts and culture are like the true backbone to society, really. They are a direct reflection of the way people's state of mind, really, because artists are small business owners, artists are entrepreneurs, artists are retail workers, you know, artists work in the medical field. Yeah, one of my favorite artists in the city, Nate Vanderhoof, he takes like the best photos of Milwaukee, and his day job is a pharmacist. You know, these artists are a reflection of culture in society in real time. So it only makes sense that it, you know, is the backbone of our community.
You know, I was thinking about me and David and the team, you know, I'd imagine we're thinking about this week and thinking about the role of arts and culture in the inaugural, as well as the remembrance. And I was just wondering for either of you, obviously the Hone's a big moment, but was there anything else that struck you about the role of arts and culture during this you know, this past week?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, really exciting to have an inauguration that, you know, might even have a secretary for the arts. You know, that would just, you know, it's an exciting moment forward for the arts industry and really recognizing that sector of the creative economy under the new administration. But I think, you know, to like the Hone was involved. I think a lot of people saw a bango from the Bucks. And I think, you know, also local artist Tia Richardson and her work was incorporated into the Parade Across America. So Milwaukee did represent, I think, really well in the inauguration coverage through multiple outlets. And all of that goes into, you know, I know the sports aren't considered, but that live event, you know, industry is critical, you know, and I think all of those combined efforts really made Milwaukee a part of the inauguration. But I think I had a call with, you know, Brad Pruitt after the inauguration, who worked with us on the Road of Democracy, continues to work with us on the Road of Democracy project. And just reflecting on Dasha Kelly Hamilton's role now as state poet laureate, mm-hmm. and we almost view her work, her poem that we commissioned called Of,
yes.
for the DNC here in Milwaukee, as the prelude, the road of democracy mm. as the prelude to The Hill We Climb by Amanda mm-hmm. Gorman. Mm-hmm. And to Brad's point, I think Amanda brought, I call her on a first name basis, but Amanda Gorman really, really brought poetry to the forefront. And yes. I think, you know, and just look at all of the people, you know, I feel Dasha had such a critical role in that moment in history. And I think it's something that we have to celebrate as a community, and excited for ways that we can partner on, you know, how we really elevate. I feel like a lot of momentum behind the arts and scene and the journey that brought us here. And I do think, you know, both Milwaukee was literally represented in quite a bit of the inauguration coverage, whether it was Parade Across America or the COVID-19 memorial, or Celebrating America special, but also all the work that's happening organically, locally, that is paving the way for this work to be done.
Yeah, my quick reaction is I came on like a Wikipedia wormhole the other day about Joseph Brodsky, who was this, in the 70s, he fled Russia because he was a dissenter, right? The state was like, you got to get out, poet. You got to get out of here. So he relocated to New Haven, Connecticut, and became a professor. And for him, poetry was the highest form. It's like, this is why we're human beings, because of poetry. And he actually thought that poetry would actually help prevent propaganda, like people succumbing to these things. And he actually promoted a program where they found the writings of poets and just left them in laundromats, just left them out in places where people were like, oh, let me read this. Cause to him, it's like, this can't be hidden in tomes and libraries. It's gotta be out there. You know, it's gotta be accessible where people can touch it and see it. And we've obviously got poetry in our popular culture in terms of music, right? Like everybody's referencing Billie Eilish lyrics and whatnot. Like, yes, poetry's there. And that's kind of poetry for commerce's sake. But I think to your point, it was really striking to me to see how many people on my feed were already meme quoting the poet from the, like, it was already like a photo and like quotes. They were all like, they were rushing to slap that sucker on there. And I think it's the point of like, it was a very like a way of like propagating it. Like, I want this vibe out there. Like that,
right.
You know, be the light, you know, we could, you know, keep your head, like all these little images. And it was, to me, it was fascinating witnessing in real time. Like, I can imagine 20 years from now, kids are going to have the shirts with her face on. Cause that's really, who knows where that's when things turn for the United States for better. Cause this, you know, was that our JFK moment where asked not what your country you, where she was like, you know, so I think that's something that we've needed a lot more of
lately. No, you know, absolutely.
If not for Bernie's mittens, right? Amanda Gorman would have won the inauguration, 100%.
She was definitely on the podium. Bernie's mittens got the gold, but I think
I think what's interesting too, we were talking about this, just Mac and I, in the preparation for this show, and this is again not a partisan thing, right? This is a fact. That for whatever reason, modern American Republican presidents have not had poets at their inaugurations. Why is that, right? I don't know, but there's something about, I think there's this risk, right, where arts and culture is sort of at a point of politicization and polarization, which feels really dangerous to me, right? Because if it becomes just the province of one political party, it either can be further marginalized or just not speak for humanity, right? Which I think is what the power is, right? Is that is that arts and sort of culture at large are the things that sort of bring us together and help us understand each other. And if we're not able to sort of have that common space, right, or that common sense that the art of poetry or that art or, you know, whatever it might be is all important, then it feels really dangerous to me. Of course, I also run an arts and culture advocacy organization. So, but that's not necessarily sort of my view, right? Is that it just feels really dangerous if it becomes more polarized and more politicized.
Samer, as a creative and an artist, how does that show up for you? I mean, I think my assumption is you're still thinking about the creation and art of it. You're not necessarily thinking about the audience and
how it's going to land, right?
How is this going to land with people, or do you? I was just sort of, or maybe you can think about how you and your other fellow creatives that you connect with, how does it show up as in these times? Or is it just I'm creating and I create and this is.
It's hard to say. I think a lot of artists this past year, just given the pandemic, have been forced to maybe confront some different types of truths about the why behind their process, behind their method, behind how to make money. And all those things, unfortunately, come to the surface at this. They rise to the surface at the same time under the umbrella of the pandemic, for lack of a better term. Yeah. I think I try not to question the why behind why I'm making something. I try to let it allow it to be an expression of self. Mm-hmm. I think the polarization of art is very patient. It's like water in that way. Mm-hmm. And I think it, David, to kind of reply to some of your concerns, I don't think that just because art has been used as a medium and maybe a more democratic as opposed to Republican representation, that it doesn't have its place, because art is patient. Just to the story that Mac was telling about how this poet came to Connecticut and, you know, and made that art real again, you know? So I think it has its place. I answered that question in like the worst way possible, but I think, I think art is impulsory, and it can also be this very tacked and carefully placed, woven, structured, beautiful expression of self. It can be both at the same time. But to answer its place in politics, it absolutely is patient. So whereas an administration like Biden's will put it at the forefront, and whereas a different administration may not have, it still existed, especially given the year that we all had. Collectively, that just proves it.
You know, I think I appreciate that, Sam. Right, I think that there's certainly a timelessness, right? That it will the power of creativity and the power of the arts will outlive all of us, right? And outlive political administrations and everything else. I think though, as I've been thinking about it a little bit more, is that, you know, if we're in this hyperpolarized sort of culture that we're in right now, and there is half of the country that believes that arts and culture is a powerful force, right, and should be celebrated and should be, you know, incorporated into the processions of civic life, and then maybe, right, there's another side of the country that does not feel that way, right, feels that arts are frivolous, are meaningless, are ephemeral, right. I think my feeling is that, like, that just sort of furthers our divides as opposed to, like, creates ways for us to come together to build more understanding of each other.
Mm-hmm. You might be right. I think my reply to that would be, you know, you can't touch an object in the world that wasn't created by an artist, or that an artist didn't have some form of design in, you know, from your toilet handle to your car. An artist designed all that stuff. Yeah. So. You know, whether you like it or not, art is here to stay.
But I think what David also is sort of revealing, I know this is something we think about, is again, this role of art as distractor, as opposed to art as maybe holding truth, which might be uncomfortable. And are we able to sit with it? And hopefully we're willing to buy support, using the language of our capitalist system, right? Fund art that does challenge us, as opposed to trying to pay for art that distracts us or maybe reinforces things that aren't true to disillusion us. And I think that's, you know, again, I don't have an answer to that. That's just something I think about, because I do think that sometimes things are good to distract us, you know, like, because stuff's hard. Let me turn this on and let me go watch The Raid or something. Let me go watch like some, you know, awesome ass kicking movie. But at the same time, I do think that ultimately my hope is that what art does is that it's an offer, you know, I think it offers anyone, especially if they're marginalized, to put their truth out there and to be witnessed. And the hope is that others get to see that and maybe join in that narrative for a moment and hold that and see what does that mean for me to hold that narrative. But anyway, maybe that's another podcast.
I would say even more so than myself, that would be like the work that Gabe does. And I think that, you know, with all the pieces around Milwaukee, they can be accessed by, you know, those pieces belong to everyone, no matter like political creed or personal creed that you have. And I think like the work that you do, Gabe, like pulls people together in that way, you know, unintentionally. And it's a very positive thing. I think that's the type of work that needs to be celebrated more often, like the work of Sculpture Milwaukee as well.
Sammer with the power weave. I think Sammer should be hosting the podcast. That was a nice pull. Because that transitions to that project you're talking about, Gabe. Can you talk about Make It Local, right? That you all, can you talk about that
real quick? Yeah. Well, thanks for those kind words. But yeah, the, you know, two really recent projects that we've been working on. One, I know, you know, there's some art that's just meant to be, you know, distracting in a good way. And that's one of the projects is Massimo's MKE. One thing that we've worked on since, you know, probably October of last year is understanding that right after the holidays is kind of a downtime in the winter. There's not a lot of things to do right now, especially with the pandemic. So the thought was like, can we do something artistic in replace of the holiday lights this winter at Cathedral Square Park? And we worked with an artist, his name is Jason Scroggin of Scroggin Studio. He's a architecture professor at the University of Kentucky. And we ended up partnering with the School of Architecture, my alma mater at UWM, and we had students build the bears. We had a build a bear workshop, if you will, inside inside the convention center. We had an entire exhibit hall to ourselves. So huge thanks to the Wisconsin Center District and Convention Center for allowing us to use that space and socially distance and allow us to use their facilities. And then we trucked the bears once they were assembled to Cathedral Square Park, where they're now on display. And, you know, as it snows, I mean, the photos that people are taking of this installation are really gorgeous. And really, it's just an idea of, you know, just kind of anyone who has, you know, that it's free, it's open to the public, it's lit all night long, you know, so you can go to Cathedral Square Park and just, you know, kind of immerse yourself into this lighting and sculpture installation that we put together. So that was our most recent public art installation, and part of it is celebrating and embracing winter in Milwaukee, which is something that we haven't done all too successfully in the past. So this was kind of our way of like, you know, these kind of look like polar bears, so let's just, you know, fully go with it. So the other component of it was at the end of 2020, Milwaukee downtown received a CARES grant to help support and market local businesses across the city. So we targeted the 12 geographically, I think it's the Milwaukee United, you know, essentially defined area of the greater downtown area. So, you know, from Martin Luther King Drive bid to Walker's Point on the south and near West Side Partners. So kind of all of that encompassing neighborhood of downtown. And we were able to document within a matter of a couple days, granted like the grant was approved. And in about a week and a half, we started turning around content because the grant had to have been fully spent by the end of 2020. So it was this all on effort between our marketing department, and Erica Chang, who led the effort, and then Sammer having a critical role documenting 12 different neighborhoods. I took the time to count how many storefronts we documented. It was over 160 small businesses that were featured over that series, which is incredible. So yeah, Sammer, if you wanted to jump in, but it was such a fun project, literally driving around the neighborhoods and doing the research like the night before or the hours before we were out filming, like what makes it integral in these what small businesses are integral in these neighborhoods, I should say. And one of them was like Mr. P's Tires in Walker's Point, or you know, the Bronzeville Collective and on Martin Luther King Drive, or you know, Sip and Purr, I think is the name of it, on the east side. You know, these like very like essential, like this is what defines the neighborhood type of businesses that we wanted to get across. So I had a great time doing that project. And Samer, I don't know if you wanted to jump in with what you thought about the project, doing all the work behind the scenes.
It was crazy. It was a lot of fun driving around for 3 days in a row, and then like staying up all night with you, sending you edits, you giving me like revisions and like sending them back. And like that was it was fun. It was a lot of fun. I think the big takeaway for me was like slowing down for a moment, even though we were working at what seemed like a hyper speed, and realizing, you know, we had a tentative list of storefronts we wanted to hit in each neighborhood, but slowing down and being like, well, that storefront looks really nice, actually, like, or I've never seen that before. We should add that. And, you know, kind of discovering a little bit about Milwaukee myself and alongside Gabe. And I think that was my biggest takeaway. And to know that these storefronts are thriving, they're adapting, you know, they're here to stay, which speaks to like Milwaukee strong and Milwaukee resilience. Mm. So there's a lot of really positive takeaways from that, aside from, you know, running a 500 miles per hour, basically.
You know, Sam, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think the most challenging, because Make It Local is all about supporting and the retail component in the dining and, yeah, and restaurant part of these neighborhoods. I think the hardest one to produce was probably the Menominee Valley, which is just historically that's not the first neighborhood you think of. But then once we got into the neighborhood, and like realize St. Paul really has this incredible design corridor with Bachman's, and there's River Antiques, and there's a couple of restaurants sprinkled in the valley. It was actually one of my favorite videos, I think, that Samer produced, because we just made it almost feel like this really cool, you know, transformative warehouse district that you could find these really, you know, there's lighting, furniture, you know, it's a cool district that I was like, I would have never thought about that. So that was like, I think, kind of a cool, you know, neighborhood that was a challenge. You know, it's like, okay, where do we begin? You know, it's such a big area, first of all, and then trying to make it, you know, specifically hone in on the retail component. And then you have the microbreweries that are starting to kind of redefine that entire area that we wanted to capture. So that was a fun neighborhood, just a neighborhood I haven't really been, you know, explored, quite frankly, that this project got me into that neighborhood. And we were able to really explore on the ground what makes this neighborhood unique.
I was just thinking, Samer, you know, when I got to know you just a couple, not too long ago, I was going to say a couple of years ago, it's probably been shorter than that. Like the reputation I heard of you is like, you were able to capture performers. Like they loved artists, like rock performers or whatever, hip hop performers loved your work. And there's some, and I sort of intuited that as like, you were able to capture in them, you know, amidst their kinetic thing, you were able to capture their essence. And so when I think of these businesses who they're not rock stars in their own way, like they're buildings, but they are kinetic in how they serve a role for the action in a neighborhood. It makes sense that you would get Samer to capture what makes these places kinetic and alive. And it's like, obviously, you know, in hindsight, it's like, yeah, that's why you book Samer. These are the rock stars, if you will, of these neighborhoods. So what a neat campaign, you know?
Yeah. Kudos to Samer for that amazing turnaround. You know, it was 13 videos, probably 3 or 4
days. Was it the kind of ask where you're like, and again, I know what this is like, maybe I'm intuiting this, like you're almost embarrassed to ask the person because you know, like, in a better world, I would have given you a longer lead time. I respect you as an artist, but
for sure, here's
the deal. I got a pot of money. We got to produce this thing.
You know, where there's a will, there's a way. And, you know, our projects, you know, that's actually just kind of the nature of our work. The funding or the grant comes in. There's a very tight turnaround to get the work produced. And I knew Samer's work previously with the Visit Milwaukee campaign, 30 videos in 30 seconds of featuring Milwaukee virtually during the DNC. And so I knew he had a tight turnaround for that project. So I was like, I think he's the guy to turn around these like quick 30-second videos for us. You know, and collectively, it was a great campaign. Makeitlocal.com, I should add, you know, we have up-to-date registries of the businesses that are open for curbside, takeout, delivery. We're constantly updating those business hours. And again, not just for Easttown, Westtown, Third Ward, and downtown, but that greater downtown area, including, you know, the East Side, Downer Avenue, MLK Drive, Bid, Walker's Point, Menominee Valley, near West Side Partners. So all of those neighborhoods are kind of in Brady Street. All of those neighborhoods are in one kind of unified place for consumers just to be able to pull up. The new thing that we'll be adding too is those winter activities that will be taking place in the neighborhoods over the next couple months. So you can find how, you know, not only shop and dine in these restaurants, but also how to enjoy winter, which again, we're celebrating. So the campaign tagline is "Don't hibernate, celebrate safely." And we have these two like very like adorable bears that are promoting, you know, the Make It Local campaign. So our Massimals MKE, which are, you know, the architect used massing model techniques and architectures to design the bears. So that, you know, they look like bears, but the tectonics of it are the same practice of an architectural massing model. So there's a bit more, you know, behind that project, but another great way to kind of show, like, we literally have bears downtown that are not hibernating, they're celebrating downtown. So it's just been nice to piece all of this together rather quickly.
If there's one sort of like thread I'm pulling together from this, is that we're really trying to unify, right? Like, whether it's these civic moments that try to unify us and how we spend time together, whether it's this this incredible memorial that we had last week to have a moment of national unity for all the people that we've lost due to COVID-19. And then even just like how we kind of like unify even some of our neighborhoods, right? Or sort of like draw a story around all of our neighborhoods. I guess, you know, as we sort of begin to wrap up, as we look forward to 2021, how do you both see Milwaukee coming together in ways that, whether it's through arts and culture, whether it's through any other way, right? Like what how do you see Milwaukee coming together in 2021?
Personally, I hope small businesses realize that they can also lean on local entrepreneurs to fill their needs. You know, and I think a lot of artists and smaller entrepreneurs can fulfill the needs of small business owners that maybe they would assume larger agencies could do. And I think that type of economic community-driven partnership can really help sustain a lot of small businesses and fill their needs, you know? And I think that type of partnership, I'm working on that personally in my personal career, like trying to basically hook people up together that will work really well together, and to be that resource myself for small businesses. So I see a lot of like economic partnerships where small businesses can really lean on each other to move forward together.
It's almost like getting closer supply chains, right? More local, yeah. Closer, tighter knit supply chains. I think that's really smart.
Okay. Yeah. You know, looking forward, I think 2021, I think, picked up right where 2021 ended, unfortunately. And then to see, you know, a bit of a kind of a new day in both on a national scale, you know, seeing these local examples of unity of the city coming together. I think, you know, the National Memorial for COVID-19 was such a great example of how many creatives, buildings, you know, operation teams that all came together for this unified collective, beautiful effort. So I think more, you know, how we can foster those and especially if we're in the positions of, you know, for lack of better terms, using the home, but bridging our community together. But I think, you know, if we're in those positions, it's really our responsibility to be at the forefront of the leadership role of making these connections. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that to me is inspiring, and the work that we've been able to do just in the first couple of weeks of 2021 is inspiring. I think, you know, as just collectively as a city, I think we're moving forward. We're optimistically looking forward to the, you know, I think the vaccine is on the horizon, which is good, you know, and I think the critical time now is really supporting our local businesses, you know, really until we can get, you know, more people vaccinated and into public space again. But I feel strongly that we'll be able to gather in groups before the end of the year. You know, I don't know if it will be massive crowds, but I think we can begin to feel a sense of comfort by the end of the year. You know, and I you know, on a lighter note, I think one of my favorite, you know, Bernie memes that hit the internet was, you know, Bernie sitting in front of the Riverside Theater, you know, waiting for live music to begin again. And, you know, quite frankly, I could not agree with that anymore. I'm so excited to see live music. And actually, looking back, 2018, I saw Joe Biden speak at the Riverside Theater. 2012 was the first time I saw Joe Biden, you know, campaign for Barack Obama, you know, and those key moments, like, you know, now looking back of like just everything that's happened in the last year, but just to know you saw, you know, the now president speak at the Riverside Theater, which unfortunately we can't, you know, enter right now because of the pandemic. You know, I think those moments really mark why arts and culture are so important. And to that matter, I think we're realizing even more, you know, why arts and culture are important because of this. So I hope we take all of what we're learning, what we did in 2020, all of those lessons, like hindsight's 2020, and moving it forward with, you know, what we hope to be a really good year.
Sam and Gabe, you know, we mentioned this, we convene you for talking about this sort of one thing, but it's evident, and you all have both done a good job of reminding me and affirming, it's not just one thing, and there's multitudes of networks and people that have come and woven. You just happen to be two we were able to grab on short notice to be in this conversation. And the hope is that we're going to see more and more opportunities to see these manifest itself more, all the benefits of these relationships and interconnectedness. And let's really leverage small walkie, you know, towards that, you know, as we come out of hibernation, as it were. Not to get rid of the Bears, but I look forward to warmer climates and
warmer hearts. We do too.
Gabe and Sam, thanks again for not just joining on the pod, for continuing to do the work of building the city from the roles that you hold.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
MacArthur, we didn't let them plug.
We're awful.
We will link to their websites and projects afterwards, but I can't believe that just occurred to me.
Don't pin this on me. Don't pin this on me. You didn't let them plug either. You crushed me when I iced Joel Brennan. You crushed me on that. I'll own that. You're gonna own. You know, I think because we're like, we don't need to plug him because we're like, I'll see you guys soon. But that's not everybody's deal.
That's right.
Sure, there are people listening like, I'd love to see Sammer's next bit. I'd love to see, you know, what's happening with the bid next and what's Gabe up to. So right. we'll share that, right? Links on the ephemera. But it was great to have them on, not just because they're so good on short notice, but I think they are, I'm humbled by, like, you know, this is where I like reveal how like old I am. Like, I'm coming up on 46 in a couple of weeks. And it's like, I see those cats and they're probably like half my age. And I'm like, oh, I'm obsolete. Wow. These really young and wise and thoughtful people are, I'm so glad they're doing what they're doing and making me obsolete.
I mean, definitely they, I think we're in good hands, right? With if more and more folks like them, I think it shows that society's in good hands. I think the thing that I'm really struck by about that conversation is, you know, sort of looking back over the year of our podcasts, right? We had, and I think Gabe talked about this a little bit, like we had Gabe and Beth on right prior to the DNC. We've had Sammer sort of work with us on the 414 day video and through a number of different projects. We also had, of course, Ian Abston and Michael Hosted on to talk about the importance of getting their project to this point of lighting the hone and the sort of civic pride that would instill, right? And so, like, just sort of pulling together these three threads together to see how quickly that has sort of paid off in a way that not only has woven community, brought people together, provided, I think, a new story for Milwaukee at a time of great loss and also potentially great hope, right, is just so incredible. And I think really is a testament to why and to why the work that we do here at Imagine, but more broadly, right, as a community, is so important.
That night you had shared on our chat, our work chat, the video of MSNBC of Sammer. And I saw the video, like, at first, like, you just posted the link. There wasn't any like comment on it. So when I first watched it, I was like, oh yeah, the home looks really great. And then I saw his name, Sammer's name, posted on there. And it really felt like that moment where like a band that you remember seeing like at your local joint, like gets their song played on the radio for the first time and just like going, right? And I recognize this, like the reason for any of this is kind of awful. Like we shouldn't have to commemorate 400,000 people lost, right? But even in that moment of seeing one of Milwaukee's own, one of our own here at Imagine, because, you know, we've worked with them a bunch, and an artist like him, right? We've either talked to or tried to connect to or book for whatever, to see that breakthrough was really awesome, you know. And we'll share this out, but his Instagram story about, like, he posted that video along it, and to your point, he said, "I'm the first generation of an immigrant farmer, and I've done what my mother set out for her kids to do in America, and that's live the American dream in a safe, fair nation. Together, we got there." Right? That sort of caps sort of what it meant to have, you know, his video put out there. You know, and that really is just like, wow. You know, in a moment, you know, again, maybe, you know, you gave us this macro thing. I was just struck on a micro level.
Yeah.
About an artist breaking through, and this won't be the last time we hear of them. We'll get to say we were there on the ground floor, obviously, but you know, and that's I think that's the work of that, in a way, that's Milwaukee in a nutshell, right? You know, too, right? That how does the whole place see how does the city see itself in a new way? How might the country see itself? And so that was really grateful for that.
I do join you though in the, because I've been reading a lot of the commentary on all of the pictures that have been posted of this moment or on his story or on his Facebook feed, or the other posts that other people made. Right, I've obsessively followed the commentary, and I join you in the feeling of like, yeah, I knew him when I knew him back.
We knew him when.
So no, but
congrats to those folks, not just really Sammer, good. But also to the teams that were capturing it. And also thanks again to the work of the folks like Gabe and his team at the Downtown Bid that are amplifying the stories of 160 storefronts, you know, 160 businesses around town. And
even coordinating that project, right? Like, I can't imagine, like, you know, God, we're like a day out of our podcast being like, oh, we need to book a guest, and they're like, what, 3-4 days out of this inaugural event being like, oh, it's going to happen, let's figure out how to do it, right? Like, that is some incredible commitment and work to be able to pull something like that off in such a short amount of time.
You know who else is incredible, David?
Our audience is 100%.
Oh man, for putting up with us. Thanks for listening, everybody. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please share it with others, post out about it on social, or leave a rating and review, or contact us directly at pod@imaginemke.org.
Imagine This Podcast is edited by David Lee and is hosted and produced by MacArthur Antigua and David Lee, and is the flagship of the Imagine MKE Podcast Network. Go listen to our sibling pods, Arts Forward MKE and Black Imagination, all of which can be found at imaginemke.org/podcasts.
To catch all the latest from Imagine MKE, the enterprise, hit us up at Twitter and Instagram @imagine_MKE, or check us out on Facebook, just Imagine MKE.
Thanks again, and we will catch you next Tuesday when we'll be joined by Chela Garcia, who is the executive director at Walker's Point Center for the Arts and also a candidate for school board. And if you haven't signed up already, we have our Neighborhood Partnerships work group meeting this week. So go find out more on our website.
See you then. Bye.